What is going on, guys? Welcome on into the Lineup Logic Podcast. Before we get started, wanted to talk to you about our holiday sponsor, Harry's Razors, harrys.com/lineup. That's where you need to go if you need to get a gift for the dudes in your life who have mangy faces. You need to go over to harrys.com/lineup. You guys have heard me talk about this before, okay? Listen, here's the deal. High-quality razors, high-quality cartridges, high-quality shave gel. Comes in packages, order it online, delivered straight to your door. And you're getting a discount when you use the promo code LOGIC here for Harry's. Now, here's the really interesting part, right? You've heard me talk about the holiday promo. You got to get involved for the holidays, okay? There are gift sets over there that start at just $10. Gift boxes, stocking stuffers. It's just the perfect gift for your brother, your dad, your brother-in-law, whatever you want to do. So this holiday, give Harry's, give Handsome, get that holiday shopping done online at harrys.com/lineup. Now let's get into the show. What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on in. Lineup Logic Podcast, daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate upcoming. I'm your host, Sean Kane. I'm bringing you the NFL Week 15 breakdown. Just craziness. Like, Week 15 is already here, and we are literally watching these players drop like flies. Oh, man. Carson Wentz goes down. That's sad. That was hard to watch. I mean, the craziest thing about that whole injury is that he takes the hit, he goes back to the huddle, throws two more passes, and ultimately throws the touchdown. What ends up being one of the go-ahead touchdowns there. Like, crazy, crazy toughness. And for him to be like, wait a second, I don't think my knee is right. Very, very unfortunate. Very, very unfortunate to see that. But, you know, I mean, hey, listen, Brady came back from one, right? No reason to believe that Wentz won't be back and better than ever in a year's time now. You know, the question is, I just don't think he's going to be able to be ready for the beginning of the 2018 season. So that's tough. That's a tough pill to swallow. But there's a lot of really, really interesting things going on. A lot of interesting storylines, some good teams that are charging. We have some amazing matchups this weekend, some just real highlight matchups, some games that are really going to be worth watching, and certainly a lot to look forward to. Hey, before we go too much further, patreon.com/lineuplogic. You can get the end of our NFL season here. You can get NBA season. $15 gets you our cheat sheets plus access to fantasy5by5.com. Shout out to everybody who is jumping in for NBA season. Of course, that's our favorite. Loving our NBA stuff right now. And you know, we're really enjoying the community. So it's kicking off right. But let's go ahead and jump into the Week 15 game-by-game breakdown. Going to talk through every game, look at the totals here, look at some of the trends and what you want to look at maybe from each side of the ball going into these Week 15 slates. All right, so this is, first of all, crazy, crazy weekend, okay? Thursday night game, Denver and Indianapolis. Who fucking wants to watch that? Oh my god. Nope. What is this, the Peyton Manning Bowl? No interest whatsoever. That's going to be a brutal game. And then you have two games on Saturday. All right. And then you have a main slate where you don't have the Sunday night game on FanDuel or DraftKings, and you have the Monday night game. So you've got everybody in action, all 32 teams, and you've got a bunch of weird schedules, small slates, stuff like that. So it's all broken out. There's just crazy amounts of different options that you can play. You know, I'm going to concentrate our efforts on the main slate, but of course I'm going to break down each game as we go through. So let's go ahead and start with that absolute stinker dud game in Indianapolis, Denver versus Indy here. You know, guys, I don't know. I mean, 40-point total here. Denver favored by 2.5. Trevor Siemian looked a little bit better against the Jets. One touchdown there to Demaryius Thomas was actually able to make him viable in fantasy. Colts coming off the Snow Bowl. They gave Frank Gore 50 million touches. You have to expect that maybe they're not going to do that again. If you're playing this slate, I have no idea. I guess you go back to Siemian and Demaryius Thomas. And you just have confidence that maybe Siemian and DT can get it done. But neither of these teams very interesting. I could see Marlon Mack getting a bunch of touches after they gave Frank Gore way too many touches in that Sunday game. And then saying, okay, Marlon Mack, you're going to get extra touches now because we don't want Frank Gore to get injured. And these Thursday night games, guys, have been just a disaster for injuries. I mean, they really have. They do, you know, the Thursday night game in the Atlanta one was numerous injuries on both sides of the ball. So they're not safe. It's not like this game was safe anyway, but these games are even worse. So who knows? I think the only thing you can do is target the Denver passing game. That's about it. That's all I'm going to do. And this game is going to be terrible. Don't watch it. Watch NBA. Miami at Buffalo. This is on the main slate, but let's go over to Chicago, Detroit. That is the first game on Saturday. 44-point total here, 18-25. Detroit favored by 5.5. On the Chicago side of the ball, nice bounce back game for this offense. Puts up 30-plus points on Cincinnati on the road. Jordan Howard looked great. Finally saw more than 20 touches. Of course, the strange thing is the snap rate hasn't popped above 60%. Still in a snap rate timeshare with Tariq Cohen. And you know that if he's not in a positive game script, that he's not going to get a lot of volume. Now, against Detroit, you could certainly gotta love the matchup. He went 15 for 125 in a touchdown last time against Detroit. They've been terrible against the rush recently, and absolutely one of the highest success rates to rushers recently. So definitely interested in Jordan Howard again. I think that they are going to try to exploit that matchup. It is a short week for them, you know, but not a Thursday night type short week, just the Saturday game, Saturday afternoon in Detroit. Now, on the Detroit side of the ball, Matty Snapbacks clearly did not bothered by the hand injury, balled out in Tampa Bay, had 380 yards. Problem is he couldn't find the end zone. They kept running the ball into the end zone, much to the chagrin of one of my lineups. But, you know, we continue to see Golden Tate had a really nice game there in Tampa Bay. That's a trend that we've been exploiting, though, slot receivers against Tampa Bay. And it could have been expected, no doubt about it. You know, and you have to think that Detroit will be able to throw the ball on Chicago again. But this is the second round of a divisional matchup, always lower scoring the second time around. And on the opposite side of that, though, Detroit is, interestingly enough, according to Vegas metrics, they've actually been exceeding their over-under. Games where Detroit has been they've been hitting the over with frequency, plus 4 points on a regular basis. Why? Well, offense is good, defense is bad, and all, you know, so you have the team that's exceeding their total quite a bit. Chicago, they've been, you know, on the defensive side, mediocre, really, to be honest with you, against the pass of late. 19th in success rate, you know, not allowing any big plays, though. But we saw Marvin Jones exploit this team pretty easily a couple weeks ago, and they are injured. I mean, this pass defense is very banged, or excuse me, the Bears defense in general is very banged up. You know, it was very disappointing, though, to see a guy like A.J. Green get a ton of volume and not be able to turn it into anything really, really useful on Sunday. I mean, the guy had unbelievable. He had 12 targets in this game and only 5 receptions for 64 yards. So a real bummer in that respect. And added the fumble, which was, you know, just kind of icing on the cake there. But I think it's indicative of the fact that if you could put a couple balls more on the mark, you can exploit this pass defense. And I would be bullish on Marvin Jones going back into this game and possibly Stafford. If you want to, you know, stack up Detroit, I wouldn't be surprised if you see 2-3 passing touchdowns here. The Chargers at the Chiefs. This one is going to be fun. This is actually going to be a great game to watch. Very important for both teams. I think they're tied right now atop the AFC West. 46-point total here, 23.5 to 22. Chargers favored by one on the road. The Chargers, man, unbelievable. Holding 14 teams to 14 points of late on the season. They've won 7 of the last 9. Rivers on fire, over 300 passing yards. Again, didn't even have to play the fourth quarter. Craziness. Keenan Allen, 4 straight 100-yard games. I just don't think this is going to stop here. I mean, I think you see Keenan Allen again exploit this Kansas City pass defense. We've seen we've seen good, competent quarterback play exploit this Kansas City team, you know, the Jets. And by the way, the Raiders, they do not qualify as competent anymore. That team has been terrible. If you've watched a Raiders game, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Del Rio has no identity. They have no idea what they're doing. Derek Carr looks skittish. His ADOT is short. They've changed course numerous times over the year. 20 rushing attempts one game. And then they're going to throw the ball deep, throw it 50 times. And then they're going to throw the ball short. And then they're going to play dink and dunk. And now they can't score. They're terrible offense. They have 0-0 understanding of what they want to do and sticking to it. Wasting the best offensive line in the league. No doubt about it, in my opinion. But whatever. Yeah, whatever. Chargers, not quite the same. They figured out what they want to do. Listen, they get Keenan Allen the most touches. They get Melvin Gordon the most touches. And they have been getting everybody significant volume in this offense. 23 touches for Keenan Allen. 23 plus touches in both games for Melvin Gordon. 10 plus targets on average over the last month for Keenan Allen. 100 yards, no doubt about it. And then you see the peripheral guys, Hunter Henry, getting touches. He continued to pop. I knew we were into him. Last week I talked about him on the show. I said, listen, everybody's going to go Kelce or they'll go Steven Anderson. You go right in the middle of Hunter Henry. He had a great game. Tyrell, Travis Benjamin, both got 4 targets last week. Tyrell Williams does his thing every once in a while, just goes, cuts the top off the defense, and you have to account for him. They continue to make him a legitimate threat. Travis Benjamin getting some love as well. They're doing it right. They're not forcing the Mike Williams situation. They're not forcing the Austin Eckler. They're using their workhorses to get this stuff done, and I think that they are going to put up a big number on Kansas City. Now, Kansas City had the Kareem Hunt bounce back, and you wonder if that's going to continue. Oakland is a terrible, terrible, terrible defense. Now, the Chargers, bad only in the sense that they allow a lot of rushing production, so you could see Hunt, get touches again, and he had over 4 yards per carry in his last couple games. The real question is how many touches is he going to get? It's really, really strange to see the volume trends. I mean, listen to the last 4 weeks, 21, then 12, then 12, then 28. And, of course, now he had the 28 touches in positive game script because they led that game the entire time. You know, if they go down to this Chargers team, very, very possible, he may not get the ball more than 15 times. So I don't know necessarily that I'm too in on Kareem Hunt just yet. I think that this team's going to change the way that they attack the Chargers based on game script. And, at home, this Chiefs offense has not been nearly as explosive as they are on the road. And we talked about that. Alex Smith's numbers at home are not that good. And you're not going to play him against Chargers. They've been a really, really very good defense. So I think this is going to be a great game to watch. I think the Chargers probably pull it out eventually. Now, moving on to the main slate. Okay, here we go. Miami at Buffalo. Hey, let's go Dolphins. No total here. And no total probably because we don't know who the hell is playing quarterback for the Bills. We don't know who's playing quarterback. Nathan Peterman with the concussion. Tyrod had the knee the week before. And you got Joe Webb playing third string quarterback for the Bills. So no idea what's going on. You have to think that Miami, though, will be favored after a nice outing against New England here in this situation. And on the Miami side, do not sleep right now on Kenyon Drake. The man is an animal. Over 20 fantasy points in both of his last 2 games. Over 25 touches. I love, love, love the idea of Kenyon Drake at 6,500 on FanDuel. He has been getting a ton of volume and extremely useful with it. Nearly 150 yards in both games. Now, he gets the trend of a really, really bad defense here. Again, Denver bad defense, New England bad rush defense, and Buffalo bad rush defense. So you know, the problem that I have is that he's not at home. Those last two games have been at home, and you're going to have kind of a weather situation. I don't know, you know, the cold weather usually favors the running game over the passing game, of course. You know, and you're still attaching your running back to a bad offense. But Jay certainly looked way more competent last night, and that running game really did look pretty explosive. And you have to love the matchup that Drake has again here. So if Miami gets a lead here on the road, you have to think that Drake continues to get volume. On the Buffalo side of the ball, listen, the quarterback situation is a disaster. I don't think Peterman is going to play. We'll see if Tyrod is going to play. But even if Tyrod plays, you have a hobbled Tyrod who has, you know, a bruised patella tendon, which is just sounds terrible. Like, just sounds like pain. Like, that's all I can think of. And Miami showed something defensively. They stopped Tom Brady from converting every single third down. That's bananas. Like, they didn't convert a third down. That's bananas, dude. That's craziness. And this is not Tom Brady. So, you know, we knew that they had a pass rush. We knew that Miami had some decent pass rushers. The question was, is are they going to be able to put this stuff together into one whole performance? They got a couple takeaways. I'm bullish on Miami because of the running game here in this situation and because Buffalo's offense basically has just looked like LeSean McCoy. Like, you have to think Shady gets fed again in this spot. But let's not fool ourselves about what Shady is capable of when he's attached to a bad offense. Like, there's a wide range of outcomes. He is not a safe cash game play. This is not necessarily the same Shady that we have seen over the years. Like, he has had some good performances, but let's be very careful what we wish for with LeSean McCoy in a bad offense. Moving on from this game, that's the lowest total, I imagine. We have Baltimore at Cleveland. Oh, no, sorry. Houston at Jacksonville. This is the lowest total on the week thus far. 39.5 points, 14-25. Jacksonville favored by 11.5 at home. What a win for them. Wow. They look good, too. Bortles looked pretty solid, man. I mean, that team looked well-balanced. And they're definitely better than the Titans. They're going to win that division, no doubt. Houston is going to have TJ Yates after we all were subjected to watching... We were all subjected to watching Tom Savage have a seizure in the end zone. That was terrifying. And if you ever needed a reason to say this game is not safe and I don't know if it's going to ever last, just go ahead and back and watch the Tom Savage clip of him, like, physically shaking with his eyes closed after getting tackled. Terrifying. TJ Yates was good, man. He hammered DeAndre Hopkins. He was phenomenal. He went for 2 touchdowns, 129 yards. One touch for DeAndre Hopkins is currently worth 3.1 PPR points per touch. That's a bananas number. Bananas. Love that. Love that. But, you know, I mean, can you play him against Jacksonville? No, I mean, not at all. This is the best pass defense in the league. They're sliding a little bit, but they're sliding when they play guys, you know, good offenses. This is not a good offense. I don't trust the Houston offense at all. I think he definitely could be interested in the Jacksonville defense in this situation. But on the Jacksonville side of the ball too, Fournette has 4 of his last 5 games seeing over 20 touches. He's catching the ball out of the backfield. He had 3 receptions on Sunday, 75% of snaps. That is good. That is good for fantasy. Houston, they're yielding average production to the running back, but we know that their pass defense has been absolutely brutal of late. Jimmy G looked phenomenal against them. Marquise Lee, he has been excellent lead wide receiver one in that offense. 2 straight weeks with more than 10 DK points, you know, and didn't score a touchdown last week. So the receptions are there. The volume is there for him. He's been effective. He destroyed Indianapolis. So you have to think that this is another good spot for Marquise Lee, possibly D.D. Westbrook, who popped a little bit last week on that long touchdown, which, oh, baby. Oh, baby. Did he look fun? Like, that was like a, there was like visions of 2015 John Brown to me is what that was. Like, whoa, just straight speed, you know, looked really like a guy who can just take the top off of the defense and really cause some issues. So, definitely some possible interest in D.D. Westbrook against this bad, bad pass defense and Marquise Lee. Now, Bortles, I will leave you with that question. To Bortles or not to Bortles? Guys, he said 2 games with over 20 fantasy points. Don't look now. Don't look now. They changed Bortles. Blake has changed. Blake, you're different. We don't recognize you. We weren't, you know, you're not forcing the ball. It's really kind of weird. And he can throw the long ball. That's the one thing this guy's always been able to do is huck the ball. He's like, a Floridian Jay. I was going to say a Floridian Jay Cutler. That doesn't work anymore. Anyway, all right. How appropriate is that? Jay and Blake in the same state and Jameis, like all you're good for are interceptions and long touchdowns. Baltimore at Cleveland. Baltimore's offense came alive though, man, in that game against Pittsburgh. Good for them. So annoying. so quietly annoying that I was thinking about this. It's like, is Baltimore like a playoff team? Like, do we have to watch them go to the playoffs again? You know, they've had a relatively easy schedule, but this is another good one. They're on the road here at Cleveland. 40-point total here, favored by 7, 23-16 implied here, very low total. And really, on Baltimore, really all you want to do is look at backfield because they're a run-first team, and they've been pretty good at it. Alex Collins, about 20 touches per game in the last two. He had a phenomenal game last time out against Pittsburgh. Buck Allen had 8. Woodhead had 6. Now, Allen and Woodhead are kind of mixing and matching with some receptions in there. Woodhead primarily the receptions. So, Collins, though, with those touches on first and second, over 5 yards per carry in both of his last two games. Cleveland allowing over 100 yards to running backs in the last month per game. So, I think you could look at Alex Collins here as a bit of a contrarian play. You know he's going to get the goal line work. They clearly seem to trust him. Harbaugh has been hammering him in the last couple games. I think this is a good spot to go back to him. He's not too expensive. He's been consistent, and he has 2 touchdown upside against this Cleveland defense. Gordon did not, on the Cleveland side, Josh Gordon, listen, I love Josh Gordon. I love the talent. I love the air yards. I love all the metrics that we talk about how great the guy is. He didn't get a target in the second half. He has a quarterback problem. They have an offense problem, guys. Like, Green Bay's pass defense, sure, trending in the right direction. Baltimore's pass defense, much better. Yes, I know Jimmy Smith is out, and I know Ben Roethlisberger threw for 500 yards. Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger have been doing shit like this for years. DeShone Kizer just started throwing the ball to Josh Gordon 2 weeks ago. All right, I get it. The man is really, really good. I'm just not completely in on attaching my money to a quarterback who has not succeeded this year and continues to struggle in success with Hugh Jackson out there not understanding how he wants to approach things. Like, they run the ball a shit ton when they're in positive game script, even though they probably should be trying to chase the lead, develop their lead with Gordon because he was so effective in the first half. No, they don't do that. So what does he end up with? He ends up with like 4 receptions for a touchdown. Like, it's tilting. I don't get it. There's a QB problem there. There's an offense problem there. There's a coaching problem. I don't understand. So I can't solve Josh Gordon and project him in a way that I feel comfortable, especially against this Baltimore defense, who I think will actually right the ship a little bit, watch the film, realize what they messed up without Jimmy Smith, and they'll be fine. They've been a good pass defense all year long. They still have a lot of really, really high quality players and contributors on that team. And listen, Antonio Brown can gash anybody. DeShone Kizer cannot. Okay? Like, let's be very careful about this. But I am interested in the Baltimore passing game or rushing game. Philadelphia at New York, 40-point total here. Well, the old get one for the Gipper here. Seemed pretty good story. Seemed like a pretty good story for the Giants in the first half. And, you know, listen, I wasn't alone. There was a lot of tickets coming in on the Giants, like the bounce back with Spags and everything like that. And who knows who you're going to get from the Cowboys. Cowboys showed up. Sean Lee was really, really helpful. I saw Evan Silva tweet this out. He's like, I don't think there was a more influential player on Sunday than Sean Lee. And if you look at the way that this defense has performed with and without him on the field, it's just so damn true. The man is their defensive quarterback. And it makes sense, you know, when you have somebody who is capable of reading a defense and telling guys what's going to happen and what's coming, everybody gets way more prepared and way more capable. All of a sudden, their talent level goes up because they're capable of anticipation. And that happens with Sean Lee out there. So definitely a solid spot. definitely seemed like a solid spot for the Giants to bounce back, but I'm not touching them in this divisional matchup, even at home against Philadelphia. Listen, Philadelphia's defense is going to show up. No Wentz. They're still hot. They're still really a good team. We saw the defense take over last week once Wentz went down. They basically said, listen, it's our team now. And they're going to have a very distinct identity. They are going to hammer the run and suffocate you with defense. And that's very easy to do against the Giants, no doubt about it. I think that this team wants to run anyway. Peterson wants to run in the winter. He have a cupcake schedule coming up. They're going to try to run their way into the playoffs and basically bleed the clock out. Okay? Ajayi did get the majority of the touches in the last 2 weeks, over 50% snaps there. He should do it again. Clement and Blunt just under 10 touches per game. You know, the question is always then who gets the touchdowns, and it's very hard to project touchdowns in this Philadelphia rushing defense or rushing offense. Now, what isn't hard to project is that they're going to run the ball probably 30 times in this game. And so if you wanted to take a risk on a guy like Ajayi, I think he's an interesting contrarian play. Nick Foles should be fine. I just don't really know where his target distribution is going to go. Does he like his tight end like Wentz does? Does he want to get the ball to Jeffrey and Aguilar? Like, Aguilar had a really nice third down catch that last game. Is that who his favorite guy is? Like the slot? So I think we have to kind of take a wait-and-see approach with Foles here against this Giants defense. But I'm not touching anything on the Giants side, and I think it's a little bit kind of a – this is kind of a wait-and-see. I think this is going to be a much more conservative offense now that they don't have Wentz. And, you know, obviously with good reason. I just think they're going to slow things down and let this clock just drip. Drip, 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 drip. They were a very fast offense. It's just not going to happen. You don't have to be against this Giants team. This isn't a good Giants team. They're not good. So you don't have to really run a lot of plays to try and beat them badly. They're a bad offense. They'll beat themselves. Cincinnati at Minnesota, 42-point total. Minnesota favored by 11 at home, implied for 26 points to Cincinnati's 15. Makes sense. Cincinnati left. They let the Bears put up over 30. Holy shit. What? I mean, you know, like, they just didn't show up. They just didn't want to play this game. And their rush defense is struggling. Currently 30th in success rate in the last month, allowing 133 yards per game, 195 total yards from scrimmage to running backs. Whoa. I think you could absolutely go back to Latavius Murray in this situation. Listen, he struggled in that Carolina game, but we've seen Carolina be a good rush defense all year long, and he is not a dynamic running back. He's not a great – he is a hammer. He goes through the tackles. We saw great games from him against teams like, you know, the Rams, Baltimore. Those two games were at home. He had a nice game against Detroit. That's a rush defense where you can hammer on them. We just saw Jordan Howard. He's a hammer-style running back as well. Latavius Murray should be able to do this thing. The issue that you have is you know, you got to keep an eye on this. Minnesota's offensive line is just bleeding. They are like, they are losing guys every single week. So they are not a healthy offensive line. So I would understand it if you're saying, listen, the combination of Murray splitting touches with McKinnon and the offensive line being banged up, I just don't necessarily trust this offense. But, you know, listen, if we see 16 touches for 105 yards and a touchdown from Latavius Murray, I would not be surprised at all. On the Cincinnati side, this team is a mess, though. I mean, and AJ Green, your favorite piece of this whole offense, is going to get Xavier Rhodes, so we're in fade mode here. I'm not touching Joe Mixon against this rush defense. Their offensive line hasn't been good enough. And that Jonathan Stewart performance was a total, total outlier. Totally random. I can't expect that that's the issue. That's going to be an issue again for this Minnesota team, especially at home. So, not really interested in anything on the Cincinnati side. Arizona at Washington. Yikes. This one's hard too, right? I mean, 43 points total here, 20 to 24, Washington favored by 4 at home. Their offense has looked brutal. Arizona giving up very little on the ground, improving against the pass as well. I really don't know what to say. I mean, they beat Tennessee. Tennessee looked like shit, but they beat them. And, you know, and Gabbard didn't really have a good game. So on the Washington side of things, I don't really know what to say about this offense. I mean, you can continue to look at a guy like Vernon Davis, but we've seen good play against the tight end from Arizona all year. Maybe Jamison Crowder. Well, maybe, but his target share never stays the same. You know, he can get 10 or 11 targets one game, and then he gets four the next. So are you going to invest in something that inconsistent? Samaje Perine got banged up in the game against the Chargers. Hopefully he practices and plays, and you like that idea possibly against this Arizona rush defense that has allowed a lot of receiving work to running backs. But, you know, I don't really understand how effective this Washington offense is right now and what necessarily they're going to be capable of doing. I think if Perine is healthy, I have a little bit more interest in taking a deep dive on them, and we'll know probably a little bit more by Thursday when I do the player breakdown. I could possibly talk about some of these guys. On the Arizona side of the ball, Kerwin Williams is interesting here. 37 touches between the last 2 weeks, nearly 100 yards in both games. And Washington very much struggling to stop the run in the last month. The most rush yards allowed in the game and a touchdown per game allowed. So definitely a spot where you could attack Kerwin Williams, I think, is a cheap kind of third, you know, flex running back on DraftKings. I think that's interesting to me because he's got the majority of the work there, and he's pretty much it. You know, Larry is always interesting, Gabbert missed him. I don't know if you guys saw that play. I had a lot of Larry last week, and Gabbert literally missed him by about 2 feet, overthrew him. He had a nice little out route to the corner in the red zone. He had his man beat by a whole yard, wide open. He threw it right at the pylon, and Gabbert just missed him. It was a touchdown. It was fucking preseason touchdown. Like, it was right there, and Gabbert just missed him. It was a real bummer. But, listen, 7 targets against Tennessee. Washington, you know, we know that they are giving up production to wide receivers. We saw that happen with Rivers in this last spot. So could you go to Larry? Yeah, but it's not necessarily a smash spot. Who knows, you know? This game feels hard to project because neither team has been very consistent in what they're capable of doing. It's difficult. It's difficult. Tennessee at San Francisco, 44-point total, man. San Francisco favored by 2? Damn. Tennessee struggling. This is a bad offense. Listen, Malarkey's going to get fired. And he should. He should get fired. This is not creative. You have some dynamic players. You have a great young quarterback. You have a phenomenal offensive line. And what do? You give DeMarco Murray the ball up the gut 45 times a game, and you cannot create any interesting creative offensive scheme. They are not fun to watch. This exotic smash mouth idea is just brutal. Like, there's no creativity to this at all, and it's very easy, I think, for teams to scheme against them. So he gets, you know, and Murray gets 78% of snaps. He's not as effective as Harry on a point-per-snap basis, but who cares, right? I mean, God, San Francisco, they're actually not really a team that you run on. I mean, we saw Jordan Howard struggle against them. We saw Lamar Miller struggle against them. They're trending in the right direction as far as their rush defense, no doubt about it. I'm not that interested. Now, you could attack them in the passing game, but there were 9 total wide receiver receptions last week. 3 for Davis, 3 for Matthews, 3 for Decker. What, you know, for like 40 yards each. What do we do with that? You can't do shit with that. So, no, we're off Tennessee. I'm sorry. Delanie Walker, maybe, but like, this offense is a disaster. They are not interesting. The San Francisco offense trending in the right direction, however. Garoppolo, efficient. Now, we haven't seen him pop yet, really. I mean, you know, 200, over 300 yards and a touchdown on Sunday. That's really great. I mean, we love that. And he airs it out, man. He had 16 yards per reception. That was phenomenal. Of course, what we want from our quarterback is always efficiency. He has been very, very efficient. Passer rating has looked excellent. Completion rate, solid. So you have to think Garoppolo continues to stay hot here. Hyde and Breida out of the backfield, 12 and 14 touches, respectively. You know, equally effective. Shanahan's creating a Freeman-Coleman situation. He's going to lighten the load for both of them. He's going to keep them both fresh. He's good with 75 yards from both of them. So you can't really go to a home favorite. Now, the one thing I will say is it seems like Hyde is getting the nod for the red zone work. Tennessee, though, decent rush defense. I mean, they're not really, I mean, not a good defense, but a decent rush defense. So I'm not that interested in it. I don't mind Marquise Goodwin. Man had 12 targets on Sunday. That's bananas. 6 catches, however. That's not exactly perfect. But Tennessee defense, not really a good pass defense. Not at all. You know, not. But they are actually have a pretty low success rate allowed, both in the passing and the rushing game. So I'm kind of not necessarily into Marquise Goodwin. I like it. I like the volume, but it's like, all right, is there, could this stop? Like, is he actually good? I don't know. There's other people I'd rather invest in. Like at the same price point, like Marquise Lee, for example, like is a little bit more appealing to me. I'm not sure. I don't know. Green Bay at Carolina. This is going to be interesting. This is a big one, guys, here. This is a big one for the NFC, okay? 45-point total here, 21-24. Carolina favored by 3, okay? And, of course, we know that the big story is Aaron Rodgers' potential return for the big fella here. He was out there on the field on Sunday. They got the win. He was throwing the ball. People are, you know, the rumor mill is spinning. It's going to be up to the doctors. From what I read, it's up to the doctors. They're going to do a bunch of tests this week and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, do you bring him back and risk him breaking it again and then having to go undergo surgery, whatever the case may be? Oh, hold on. Sorry. Talking computer. All right. So NFC playoff picture right now. Panthers sitting at 9-4. Good for them. Good for you. I hate the Panthers, but good for you guys, okay? Green Bay still alive at 7-6. Now, they would have to, they're not going to be able to catch Minnesota, okay? But they could possibly catch a team like Atlanta. They could possibly catch a team, you know, if they win down the stretch, they'll at least give themselves a chance against a team like Carolina. Because if they beat Carolina, then Carolina would go to 9-5. Green Bay would go to 8-6. And then, you know, if Carolina loses, then you could have a situation in which, you know, maybe down the stretch, there's a little bit of a possibility. There's a possibility that they could be in the mix. Of course, Seattle still has a lot to say about all that. So there's definitely some, you know, Buffalo still a playoff team in the AFC, by the way. How fucked up is that, huh? Buffalo. Unbelievable. Like, what? What? Get out of here with that, Buffalo. That team is so bad. But the AFC is not very good this year. It's very top-heavy. Anyway, all right. So, Green Bay, breaking this game down from a fantasy perspective. If we get Rodgers back, you got to buy these Green Bay wide receivers hard. You're going to need some Jordy. You're going to want some Devontae. Listen, this Carolina pass defense is not good. Good rush defense, but not a good pass defense. They are allowing an increased explosive passing rate, plenty of yards to the wide receiver. We've seen big games from number one wide receivers week after week. We saw Michael Thomas do good work against them. Adam Thielen dropped a touchdown, but also caught a touchdown and sent me tilting into oblivion. So we have to be willing to attack Carolina in the passing game. And if Rodgers is back, I mean, part of me is even saying if Hundley is and everybody's off of the passing game, but they're still not a great, I don't know. They have a better pass rush. Hundley could struggle with that. That's definitely, you know, it's not the Browns here, but I think you could certainly see a nice game from Devontae Adams and Jordy Nelson. Now, they priced up Jordy Nelson just in kind of anticipation of the possible Rodgers return because they didn't want to give him away for free. But they're still cheap. They're both in the 7K range. Part of me likes Devontae Adams better. I think he's just playing better football, and I would wonder if necessarily – I mean, we forget that, like, yes, the red zone work is there for Jordy, but Devontae had some damn good games with Aaron Rodgers, and he's been very, very explosive. Seems to be, you know, getting it done in this offense. On the Carolina side, I, you know, do not believe in Jonathan Stewart in this situation. That was a total outlier performance. He's not an efficient running back. I don't know how that happened. He got out-touched by Christian McCaffrey. Excuse me, out-snapped by Christian McCaffrey, but out-touched McCaffrey. Cam still hasn't thrown for over 100, 200 passing yards in the last couple weeks. literally had less than 200 passing yards and had one massive rush. So he continues the rushing yards, but he's not that effective of a passer. I don't get how this is a high-quality NFL team. It just doesn't make sense to me. I am comfortable with Devin Funchess, though. 26 targets over the last three games, at least seven targets in all three of those games. He's got two TDs in the last two. He's been very useful, been watching. He looks good. I mean, he has an ability to get open, and Cam has an ability to find him. I think he is very interesting against this Green Bay defense. Cam's just really ineffective. He's just really, really bad completion rate. Not a very good passer, not very accurate. That kind of worries me. So, well, this one is a wait and see. We'll know more by Thursday when we get the news. Dallas at Oakland. Sorry, that game's out of place. That game's on Sunday night. We will come back to that one. New York Jets in New Orleans, 47-point total. Oh, wow. 31.5 to 15.5. New Orleans favored by 16 points. Listen, the Jets have no Josh McCown. That's bad. They're going to struggle here, no doubt. New Orleans coming off a long rest, of course. Now, the story will be Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara with the concussion on Thursday night. He sat out. He got pulled in the first quarter. We'll see. I haven't heard any news about him yet, but we'll find out shortly, I'm certain. Mark Ingram in positive game script should be interesting. You have to think that there is no way that the Jets offense can stay on the field. New Orleans rush defense has been bad, but they're not really a rush first team. They got completely blanked by the Broncos. If Robbie Anderson can't get involved, then this team is going to struggle. So I like Ingram in this situation, positive game script. Michael Thomas, though, I mean, this team is certainly capable of being exploited by the wide receiver. The issue with Ingram is really that this team is halfway decent in stopping the run. And it's very, very hard to script out what the Jets defense is good at because they've allowed weird numbers. Like, they've allowed massive performances to, like, deep receivers. So do you go to Ted Ginn? Are we going to Ted Ginn here against this team? Maybe. And then, you know, some decent numbers, like, occasionally to running backs. Like, Christian McCaffrey had a nice game. But they've also played some, like, strange and bad offenses, right? You know, we saw Kansas City put up a big number on them with Travis Kelce. But nobody else has a Travis Kelce. Like, you know, Kobe Fleener is not Travis Kelce. So, okay, we can't really use that as an example. Tyreek Hill had a massive game. All right, Ted Ginn, that's kind of the comparable there. Kareem Hunt got destroyed, right? I mean, so that's a weird comparison. Denver had only one offensive touchdown against them. The running backs, none of them were effective. They ran, like, you know, 14 times for 44 yards. Carolina had a weird game where they had two, like, a special teams and a defensive touchdown. I don't really understand how to read the Jets' defense of late. It's very strange to me, but I do know that the New Orleans offense is run first. They're at home. They're massive favorites, so you have to be interested in the running backs here, no doubt about it. You know, Ingram is not that expensive. Like, that's the one thing that we kind of, you know, Kamara is like 9,100 on the main slate, which is just craziness, especially considering Lev Bell is also that expensive, or just about that expensive. And, you know, Kamara, not quite. Ingram, not quite, excuse me. He is, and hold on, let me pull this up real quick. 8,300, that's a solid price. Now, Todd Gurley at 84, kind of, you know, maybe I pivot there just because the way Todd Gurley has been playing of late has been phenomenal, and you have a higher total game. Speaking of a higher total game, the Rams at the Seahawks. That's the game we're talking about right now. 48-point total here, 25-23. Seattle favored by two. The Rams, of course, we saw Todd Gurley have a nice blow-up game on Sunday against what is a good rush defense. But Gurley went out there, put up 27 fantasy points, and it was the difference between not getting in the end zone. He just hadn't gotten in the end zone, you know, and ripped off some big, big chunk plays, had 39 receiving yards, had 13 rushes for 96 yards. And he has been hyper efficient on the ground. Let's be clear about this. 20 plus touches. He has got the, you know, a phenomenal workload. His price did not really adjust here. You know, he's faced a string of kind of mediocre defenses, not Philadelphia, but, you know, Arizona, New Orleans, Minnesota was a good defense, but Houston, not a great defense. The Giants, not a great defense. But I think you could go back to him, and I think you're comfortable saying, like, okay, Seattle's defense, not quite the same. Like, this is a high-scoring team. And Leonard Fournette went for 22 touches, over 100 yards, and a touchdown against this team. We saw the Philadelphia run game struggle, but Bobby Wagner, remember, he left that Jacksonville game with, I think it was a hamstring. We'll see. He's in doubt right now. The Bobby Wagner injury is a really big deal for this defense. We will see. KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner are doubtful right now. If you have no Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, like, whew, you got to be interested in Todd Gurley here, boy. Like, this is going to be an interesting game, and they need this one after their loss there. They want to get this one. Now, on the and the Rams should be able to actually, by the way, they should be able to throw the ball too. I mean, the Seahawks are down to 24th in AFPA to the wide receiver. So we could definitely see a Sammy Watkins sighting here. We could definitely see a possible Cooper Kupp sighting, especially if they're capable of moving the ball with Gurley. I like this game. I like this game a lot. On the Seattle side, I mean, Russ, guys. I mean, Russ is unbelievable. 24 fantasy points against the Jacksonville Jaguars, who have been, you know, just death to quarterbacks this year. His target distribution continues to be where it has always been. Very spread out, okay? But Baldwin has the most, just ahead of Paul Richardson, who, you know, is kind of in that, kind of in that Ted Ginn mold, right? Five targets per game, and if he gets a one, it's going to be deep, and it's going to be a touchdown, and you're going to get, you know, 20 fantasy points from him. He did that on Sunday. And he's done it before, but he's been getting the touches. He's definitely number two. Jimmy Graham continues his red zone dominance, unbelievable streak that he is on. I think he's got 5 weeks with a touchdown. I think that's right. He's only 6,700. Oh no, okay. Jacksonville took him away. But I believe there was a touchdown that was called back. Before that, he had five straight touchdowns in 4 weeks against Arizona, Atlanta, San Francisco, Philadelphia. Now, very few targets in a lot of those games, but red zone dominant. There's clearly a lot of rapport there. He's doing his Jimmy Graham thing, one of the better touchdown scorers in the league. Rams, 17th in AFPA to the wide receiver. Russ at home. I don't know how you don't consider him. The way that he has been playing recently with a high-scoring possible game, it's hard to know who you can trust on the other end, but you just play Russ. The issue that you have with Russ isn't Russ himself. It's that you have two quarterbacks in this upcoming game that I'm going to talk about that are just unbelievable options here. Pats, Steelers, oh baby. This is fantasy goodness to the max. We're in Pittsburgh. 53 points total, 27-25. New England favored by 2 on the road, but we'll see if that sticks. I'd be interested to see if that sticks after they lost to Miami. Who knows? The Pats, yeah, like they said, this has to be a Brady bounce back. This is a loss to Jay Cutler. I mean, did Miami write the script about how to stop this team? I don't know. I'm not going to go back and watch the film. I was just blown away by how good Kenyon Drake looked and how Jay, like, you know, I mean, smoking cigarettes at halftime, saying, fuck off, Belichick. Pittsburgh, they have been in some massive totals lately. 30-plus points in the last couple games, huge numbers. I mean, that game against Baltimore was like, what, almost an 80-point game? Massive game against Cincinnati, a lot of scoring in that game as well. I don't see this being a low-scoring game, no doubt about it. Now, Joe Hayden apparently returning to practice this week. We'll see if he actually gets to play. You know, stress injury in the leg, not really. But on both sides, it's the running game that you want to get involved in. It's the running game on Pittsburgh that has struggled. It's the running defense on Pittsburgh that has struggled and should continue to struggle without Shazier in the lineup. Now, And we saw what New England was willing to, or what New England has given up to guys like, even Shady McCoy had a big game against them on inefficient offense. Kenyon Drake had a massive game against them. Their rush defense continues to be bad. And why? Because they're trying to protect against the big play. They are the bend, don't break defense. And listen, against explosive players, bend, don't break doesn't really work because you bend way too much and all of a sudden teams are getting into the red zone on every single possession. So Lev Bell in a smash spot, Deion Lewis in an interesting spot, although he didn't get a lot of work last night, in the rushing game. He was not very, very effective. Rex Burkhead continues to be the lead dog there. In some respects, I mean, lead dog's a strong term for a guy who never really gets more than 15 touches or 100 yards, but the touchdowns are going to him. So Lev Bell, Antonio Brown, very, very interesting. You know, the Pittsburgh pass defense is not that bad. This is what I worry about when I think about Brandon Cooks. Now, I don't think they can defend Gronk, and Gronk is going to come back with fresh legs against the, you know, against this team. I think that they are going to struggle, and you know Belichick isn't going to try. He's not going to want to lose this game. But I think I'm much more interested in the Pittsburgh side of things than I am in the New England side of things, mostly because the New England assets are so spread out. It's so hard to determine who is going to do get you the production, whereas we know that Lev Bell and Antonio Brown are going to be getting you massive production. I mean, fucking Antonio Brown had 213 receiving yards on 18 targets on Sunday. Are you kidding me? What? Like, unbelievable numbers. Unbelievable numbers. So, very, very interested in Antonio this weekend. I think I'm going to try to figure out how to get him in there. Now, on the Monday night game, Atlanta-Tampa Bay, 47-point total here. Atlanta favored by a touchdown on the road. They're a playoff team right now. They got to stay in the hunt. They should be able to against a bad Tampa Bay team that has just kind of hung it up. Atlanta's defense trending in the right direction. You know, they've been relatively effective. I can't believe that they survived that game on Thursday night. I don't think they survived that game if Kamara plays. I think the Saints were kind of off balance without having that part of their offense there to have some kind of, you know, massive dynamic playmaker that was always a threat. I think they just weren't ready for it. They didn't really know what to do without the threat there. And Atlanta was able to tie back their ears and just stop Ingram. Even though they weren't able to stop Michael Thomas. I don't really see this being a great situation for the Tampa Bay offense. They've been unbelievably ineffective, and we have seen rare, weird snap situations happening. They're giving, like, you know, Marquise Goodwin a bunch of snaps, or Chris Godwin, a bunch of snaps, Mike Evans not really getting targets. We don't know who it is, Doug Martin or Peyton Barber. You know, they haven't been able to put up a lot of points. There's not a lot to like on the Tampa Bay side. I think that on the Atlanta side, you're always wondering, if this is the Julio game where he bounces back, goes again ham. I think you've run a massive risk not playing Julio on a Monday night in prime time, coming off extended rest after, against a bad passing defense. But I also am interested in Devonta Freeman. The Tampa Bay rush defense has been really bad. If you give up two touchdowns to Theo Riddick, you're officially on my list. Theo Riddick's not good. Devonta Freeman had a nice game against New Orleans. Now, it could have been a little bit more efficient, but this rush defense, not very good either. So I think Freeman is on my list there as well. If I'm doing anything, I'm going straight at Atlanta in this one. Hey, guys, that is it. Massive, massive slate, like tons of different options. The Thursday night, the Saturday, the main slate on Sunday, the primetime with the Sunday night game. Oh, by the way, the Sunday night game. Whoa, I forgot. Dallas at Oakland, 46-point total, 21-24. Dallas favored by 3. Give me Alf. I mean, I know Rod Smith scored the touchdowns, but Alf's workload hasn't changed. He had over 20 touches, and Alf, you know, Smith had that big pass play. So Oakland's pass defense, not good, but clearly the rush defense isn't good either if Kareem Hunt had his bounce-back game there. On the Oakland side, nope, Sean Lee is back. The defense looked good. This offense looks terrible. No Amari Cooper. Crabtree should get more targets, but I'm not that interested in this Oakland offense. They have been bad, and they have no identity. You don't know what they're going to be capable of doing or do, if they're going to even score. I mean, they have, like, had, you know, like one or two offensive touchdowns. In all of their games recently. That's just not enough for me. So I am I'm very interested in the Dallas side, Alf, in this situation. I think you could go to Dak as well here. He looked very good returning to form on Sunday against a bad defense in the Giants. But that's it. So, all right, that was it. Now we're officially done. A ton of slates options, a ton of different options to play here, guys. Good luck. Invest wisely. Don't watch Indianapolis, Denver. Let's go ahead and let's protest the league here on this one. Let's go ahead and pretend that Indianapolis Denver is not playing. God, that's terrible. This should be a fun weekend, though. Good weekend of football. Looking forward to the Saturday night game. And, of course, Sunday afternoon is going to be a lot of fun with Rams, Seahawks, and Pats Steelers. So enjoy. We'll bring you some NBA breakdowns tomorrow, and we'll talk to you next time.